the value in it, and it seemed expensive, but it was like, it's like I should just grab up as many proper words as possible.
I wish I had done that. Because you heard about all those stories of people, you know, buying these high quotes.
I wish I had the resources I had now.
Yeah.
2020 hindsight, of course. But yeah, no, that was one thing. I was like, I really get it. I see how this is like real estate, and there's no, especially once we established that .com was going to be the pretty much universal standard.
Yeah, you know, I jumped on early. It was funny because I didn't know what to call my company. This is when I first started my graphic design business. And I just came across, well, Ramsey, Z-Ram. Everybody pronounces it like Z-Ram or something.
Z-Ram.
You did Z-Ram, which is probably better because you're closer actually than Z-Ram, which you can't even pronounce. But so I started that and I thought, oh, okay, I'll just get a domain for it. Type it in, you know, okay, sure. It's available. It was like before GoDaddy or any of that. It was like, I think you had to go to Whois or one of those, you know, and you had to, and it was, I don't know, it was dirt cheap, like 10 bucks or something, you know. I couldn't believe they were selling domains, but I didn't think anything of it. And I was working at the time for General Graphics, an exhibit company. That's where I started doing graphic design work. And they wanted to start a website. It was like everybody back then in the mid 90s, everybody was like, you got to have a website. And everybody's like, why? I don't know. You just got to have a website. You know? So I got tasked with designing a website for them back in, this would have been like 95, maybe 96. And the, so General Graphics Exhibits, I went in, typed up GGE.com, got it. GGE.com.
Wow.
I can't imagine.
That
was just available.
Easy. You know? I know. That's a lot of money.
Oh my God, I know. I've had offers for Z-Ram, but not a lot. There was actually a company that had Z-Ram before I did, and it was a semiconductor company. They made these Z-Ram chips, and it was here in Silicon Valley. And sometimes I would get emails from, like, I guess clients of theirs or something when they forgot the dash and it would just be my.com. But I always thought how dumb that was that they bought the domain Z-Ram, but not Z-Ram, you know?
There was a period, well, you would know this, there was a period where people were like, hyphens are fine. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's the one special character you can kind of get away with. So, and it separates the words or the keywords, as it were. And it was during the like later 90s when like SEO started becoming a thing and having keywords in your domain was, I worked at a shipping, a company that made cases, rigidized aluminum shipping cases for either like really specialty equipment. So things that need to be like custom ship and put like, so foam or like military stuff, like rack mount kind of like cases and whatnot. And this was when SEO and like Google and kind of like that stuff was really, really fresh. And for my boss's desired keywords, which were like rack mount cases, military cases, shipping mm-hmm. cases, because we had so many different domains, literally rack mount dash cases.com, rack mount cases.com, rack mount dash case.com. And he used to game all of them and he used to put up separate websites on all of them. And there were times that, it's a testament to Clean My Space's success, which has been just being able to appear near the top of the search results. Like, sorry, Clean My Space, the cleaning services mm-hmm. company that we have, just for those desirable. Anyways, long story short, I distracted. For a time, he was like number one, number three, number four, number six, number eight on the top results. And you can, at that time, you could run an entire business off of just some well-placed, well-running websites and whatnot. So people got really, really heavy into the hyphens because all of the other regular ones dried up. And now I find we don't really see that much anymore. Like you don't see really
keywords. It's interesting how... I think domains have evolved into a point where, one, they're not really that important because I don't really, it's pretty rare where I actually type in a full domain.com. I'll just type in Google search for it. It'll find it right away. So it's not, I think where I've been using them mostly is for just like lead magnets and stuff. I'll just create a custom domain that'll just, it'll redirect to the main site because it's easy to plug something that somebody can remember. that way. Do you remember when you were talking about keywords back in the 90s, do you remember the era when you would have like a black or different colored background and then you would make the text the same color and it was all at the bottom of the page and it was just like this wall of keywords that you couldn't see unless you highlighted it, you know?
Yes, and then they caught on to that, and that was one of the first kind of like big band things that you
right.
could do, like Black Hat, I believe, or whatever it was. It's like, oh, you're keyword stuffing, and da da da. Yeah,
I was hand coding HTML on Windows Notepad. That's how I made my first websites. Was just like copy and paste tags and fill it all out that way. I guess that would have been like HTML1 or whatever before it kind of got more advanced. Once it started getting advanced, I was like, whoa, this is way beyond anything I want to really get involved in. But it was really tedious doing all of that. It was kind of fun. You know, it was interesting at the time. I wouldn't want to do it anymore.
Did you use Dreamweaver during the time that?
Yeah, right when it came out, Macromedia came out with Dreamweaver. They came out with Fireworks and Flash a little bit later.
And Director, where you Director, could
right.
actually make, that was my first introduction, just like, oh shit, I can make like movies and animations on this. I remember coming across Macromedia Director, just my head exploding.
There were like these weird HTML editors you could download too. There were some free ones and some real cheap shareware ones. And they were really goofy because it would just be like keywords or you read like tags, you know, and instead of typing the tag, you would just click the tag or drop it down, but it wasn't graphical at all. All it did was just kind of save you a few minutes of typing things in. It was kind of weird.
It was the days of spinning at symbols and emails and under construction. And it was a little construction guy.
Oh yeah. And then remember the rainbow bar, you would make the bar separate different sections. And the most hideous one was the blink tag. Because you could do blink, and because it was too slow, it was like blink, blink, blink.
Like,
and you put them on images, and so you would get to these web pages. There was like a thing whether people would call them like your home page, your web page, your website. It was all kind of the same, but you would hit these, and you could always tell when it was like some really amateur site because it was just a color explosion of all of this stuff flashing and colors and oh my god.
Skip intro, flash intros.
Yeah.
Flash intros being behind websites and then us learning that it's like, wait a minute, we have a 7 megabyte file being loaded in before
right.
the text of our website is being loaded.
But you know, it's kind of like YouTube. I like the way that websites in general have evolved to sort of a standardized yes. way to approach them and how you navigate and everything is sort of standardized and it makes things a lot easier. You know, if I always look at like a website that I think is the ultimate of just good design for a super high-end website, it would just be Amazon because everything on there seems really yes. easy to find and functions really well. On the other end would be Facebook. Facebook to me just confuses the hell out of me.
I hate Facebook.
I never use.
And I hate using it for business too. The personal page and the.
Well,
new
see, that's why I've got Catherine does all my. Yes. She does all of my Facebook stuff on there. I actually never even check in on it because it's just too. I think what happened with Facebook is they started adding more and more features, and it just became so bloated, and they weren't considering how they related to everything else, and so. Now, to me, it's just, and even people who understand Facebook really well, like when we were trying to figure out how to get other people on my team to be able to advertise, you know, my courses and how to get them in there. And even they have a hard time trying to figure out, wait a second, how do we get on this account? Because you have to have a personal to have a business account. And then it's just, it boggles my mind how confusing Facebook is to me when you want to use it that way.
With the sponsored deals, Facebook is always the one where it's like, oh, you have to go into your business manager and allow us to like share this, that, and the other. And it ends up being, I have the same thing. We have Ronit who takes care of the majority of that kind of stuff, but she'll come and be like, it's way too confusing to use Facebook. There's my personal account. There's the business manager. If it has to do with if you have a business page or whatnot, and then you can just have fan pages and then you can, and all of them are in separate things. Now they have a creator studio to be able to produce posts, but that's different from the business area. If you need to apply brand permissions to some spot, like, and they have, like you said, it expanded, but it expanded with all of these sects, which kind of like took it in a different direction. And Amazon makes very, it's very, they have, I think it was Web 2.0, I guess, that mm-hmm. probably ushered this in. Let's strip away graphics and movies and get back to SEO started leading towards, we're reading your content and now we're putting in like saturation percentages and stuff. Like we're understanding that you can't just say a word a bunch of times. So now they're figuring out how it should flow and it should be readable versus just trying to be read for the search engine. I think that's what ushered us into kind of how I think it evolved that way because it needed to.
It had to, yeah.
I remember being so interested at the start about the artistic aspect of it. And you're absolutely right. It was Amazon. And I, for the life of me now, can't think of any other good examples now that I'm trying to think about it. But it were those. It was, I started paying attention to more functional, successful websites that were hosting large amounts of people and got a lot of stuff on a lot of people's screens at the same time and respecting how to do that in a more minimalist way. That took, and that's just kind of what everybody ended up wanting in.
Right.
You don't want to go, you literally just want to hit the restaurant website, find out where the dinner menu is, and then find out where the phone number is or the online order button. Like, I get how it needs to be that, like, that straightforward, and strip away your flash intros and your spinning logos. And
right, because people don't want to hang out on websites anymore. And that's one of the things that frustrates me when I'm looking for one little bit of information. And I go to a website and you instantly get this pop-up that says, can you subscribe? And you want to do it? And I'm, no, I don't want any of this shit. All I want to do is just get this one bit of information. Stop it. Just stop it.
One of the things that fell prey to all of this were communities. Forms, PHBBBs, and like actual community, those forms, they still exist, but they're so buried now because of just disposable websites, which are review websites, which just end up taking away a lot of the bandwidth for other like valuable community. And you need to be a very savvy internet user to figure out how to get the answer to your question by people discussing it in a forum setting, as opposed to. And I think it's because we probably know how easy it is to design websites. And you go to a website and very quickly you're like, okay, there's three Google ads above the fold. So like, this is clearly just trying to get the visitor and then get the ad revenue. And it doesn't matter if there's any value. And it's moved from keyword stuffing to like, now they know how to compose articles, but
and some of those articles are so hard to read because they just keep repeating themselves.
Or they just, they send bots to just pull Amazon, like the description off of Amazon and then compare it. And it's all done algorithmically. And I think that's the issue. And they're producing floods the market. And then sooner or later, of course, those are going to start anyway.
Exactly. I was looking for like a recipe real quick. I just thought, how do I make a quick sauce for some salmon, you know, a nice cream sauce or something for salmon. And Google that comes up with this web page. And they could have just simplified this recipe into little bitty thing, but no, it has to say, it has to have all these things that, you know, people would be searching for. So it keeps repeating itself. Is like making a cream sauce for salmon is one of the best ways you can enhance a salmon. Have you ever wanted to make a cream sauce for your
that's right. It
sounds very conversational, but it's also very simplistic. It sounds like it's written for about seventh grade level or something, but just the level of repetition on there is just so irritating. And you see that, I guess, more and more. It's one of the things that I kind of, right now we're in the middle of kind of, it's not a full redesign, but we're redesigning my website. It's basically done, but I've been struggling with this for a long time, is what is really the purpose of my website? I have a website, I've had it for years because I had it when you had to have a website because everybody said you had to have a website. But now it's just like, well, everything there is elsewhere a lot easier. And I don't think people go specifically, certainly to a website to go watch videos. That's just dumb when you can just go to YouTube and see them there. So, you know, I'll expand and have some articles on there. So I guess the point now for me with Woodworking for Mere Mortals is that I view the website as more or less just another kind of entry point to working for Mere Mortals. I don't expect people to stay there for a long time because there's not really any purpose to. So while they're there, I'm trying to, you know, ease them into letting them know about my courses, about my YouTube channel. So it's a funnel. Although in this case, it's kind of like I see the website and YouTube both working hand in hand to feed people to sales. You know,
I used to think that there were.
I'm making a pyramid shape here, you know, which is probably not the best.
We found ourselves in the same issue. We ended up putting we do AdThrive, which is a separate monetization platform for our videos on our website. So we upload using their player and their whatever, and they feed ads. That has become an excellent second source of income, simply because we have the ability to, in some cases, we come up number one for the video in the Google search, and we come up number one on our website for the exact same thing. And it's the exact same video, but it's not that video just embedded into it. It's literally a separate version of that video.
I'll have to look in. I want to talk to you more about that. I don't want to spend your time.
There's a whole thing that we can sounds interesting about websites, because we're in a very interesting position now where I used to treat it as videos being the most accessible thing, drive them through to the website. Once they get to there, use that to sell them cloths or to get them into a program or to take whatever the next logical step is down. Mm-hmm. And now, quite like I think what you were referring to, I've kind of moved them. And now the videos drive directly to whatever the call to action is, and the website acts as the same thing. And in some cases, the website does a lot better in some with some pieces of content than our YouTube channel does, and obviously vice versa. But having, it used to be back in the day, in order to post on Facebook, to get the full-size clickable thumbnail, if you had it on your website and you used the website as the link to our new video. So we used to launch a video on YouTube and on the same time, take that, embed it into the website, make a bullshit kind of article about it, and then spray both of them out there. And then if people went to the website to watch the video, that was fine. And that's why some of our videos have like a million views and only like a couple hundred comments, because most of the views came from an external source and all of the rest. And back in those days, we used to do very well with boosting on Facebook, because it was way more accurate than it is now. It's just not, the taps aren't as open. They kept squeezing the taps more and more shut with how easy it was to reach Facebook people. Back in the day, to get a full size clickable thumbnail, your thing, if you did YouTube, you got the little tiny one, and they really suppressed YouTube links. You weren't allowed to boost
right them. No, they didn't like YouTube.
That ended up being, but however, what happened by doing that process just over and over for years as part of the video making process, I ended up realizing the Google search result pages were picking up random things. And we have one which is like it's a Keds article, it's about cleaning your Keds or Toms, like canvas shoes. Gets like every day, gets 15 to 25,000 visitors. We have one about cleaning silver. It gets 10,000 visitors every single day. And there's been periods where it gets 50 to 60,000 because it's literally number one, how to clean silver. Yeah. And it just was randomly, just went up as randomly and as routinely as all of our content used to. But it was an example of like, look, this one just caught fire. And now it literally produces, those two articles produce, I mean, not crazy amounts, but like $2,000 a month, every single month, just because. So I've always paid attention. However, it's clearly much more difficult, because what we're getting at is now there's a lot more websites that have caught on to that, and it's not as easy to kind of do that. So now we've moved to like, what do we want our website to be? And I started looking at other people in our space, and they moved it from trying to be like Martha Stewart or Real Simple and article to just like cleanmyspace.com. You're looking for our book, it's here. You're looking for some articles or our blog, it's here. You're looking for our program, it's here. You're looking for our videos, they are here.
That's
more of a landing page, more of an experience in where you want to go. So if the articles are still there, and hopefully will still actually represent that income stream that I was talking about, and we can still treat it, but it's less about that's the whole website, and we figure out how to like monetize that, versus it's just, it talks about Clean My Space, and it's less about just going there for articles, even though you still can.
That sounds like exactly what we're doing. We've really stripped down the website. We hired an SEO guy so he could kind of give us some insight on current SEO, because it seems to be changing constantly.
No idea what's going on right now. As much knowledge as I have about SEO, I have zero clue what works.
And I'm not sure if anybody truly does, you know.
And I also think a few years ago, it literally started coming down to common sense. Just like, yeah. Google do what they do and you just concentrate on the user experience and less about that. And hopefully they will sort it out. And I find that they normally do.
I think Google has gotten really good at knowing how people are going to try to game the system. You know, they're not dumb.
I think reputation score is now one of the, I think it's also the biggest thing on YouTube. I think that's why partially our video, maybe yours as well, but our videos are doing very well because I think they finally got to the point where they understand the value between our cleaning videos versus just space that gets way more views. But like, why are we the ones that try? Like, what, like, why do we kind of get this extra
that you would, a Google search would be good for driving people to a website, but then they added the YouTube videos on a Google search. So the YouTube videos will be right at the top of your search results. And so it's really kind of one and the same. So what we're trying to do with the SEO is on some of the more useful articles on the website, they're always accompanied by the video from YouTube, but it will expand them. We'll add, you know, screenshots, pictures. So people, the idea here is that those are going to be, I don't want to say stuffed with keywords, but they're definitely going to be Google friendly about, we're thinking about phrases and things that what would people be searching for, and how do we work that into natural language that doesn't sound stupid and doesn't sound repetitive. And so the idea is that people aren't going to my website by typing it in and they're seeing that homepage. They're coming in at all these different points. I think it's true with every website, you know. So it just has to be clear when no matter where they come in, what I want them to do. Yeah, read that article, but here's what I really want you to do.
Right.
Find out that I have other things for sale. And so that's kind of the strategy that we're taking right now with it. But it's just like you were saying, all you go there and it's like, okay, here's videos, recent videos, you can watch those on YouTube, I don't care. And there, but there's going to be an article and you can download woodworking plans there too. That's kind of the main reason people go there.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be, here's the courses I have and here's some of the merch and stuff that I sell and an about page. And that's basically it. You know, it's really stripped down. I mean, I used to do the whole thing. We had the huge site with, we had a forum on there and
Planning on going into that. We were planning on literally turning it into a full-blown community and be like, let's pull them all over from YouTube. Let's get them all over here because then they'll be proprietary and this, that, and the other. And that's just not easy anymore. And
I don't think people are interested in that. Basically, I think most people just go to a handful of sites. I know I do. I use YouTube and most probably older people use Facebook. I don't think a lot of young people use Facebook anymore. Instagram and then maybe shopping sites, Amazon, that sort of thing. So I don't think just going to a website has very much appeal anymore at all.
Especially for what they're looking for through both of what our offerings are. It's like, I want, what I love most about where we seem to be going is them being able to tap into actual videos and find actual segments to literalize, to like literally make it so you can just be like, how do I clean a toilet?
Right.
And the top result is a video which you can just tap on and it just literally says this 47 seconds.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Will give you everything that you need to know and you're just, and you don't need to scroll through people's, like, I was at my grandma's house and like their stories or that blog style or that website style, which used to be the entry point because video wasn't so whatever. But I think with, especially with now, like people don't even, I have a Google phone. So I'm just like, hey, Google, how do I cut, you know, what kind of saw blade do I use for da 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 da? What I'm hoping for is Steve Ramsey's video to come up at the top with just that part. So I don't even need to scroll. And that seems to be the new whatever. So now going to the website is when you watch that video all the way through. And at the end, you're like, hey, check out my website for more. And then when you get to the website, as opposed to it, oh, this is just some articles that I'm not interested in. It's not targeted. It's like, hey, oh, here's different things that in different ways that I can engage with Steve, or here's the different kind of outlets that Steve has. That's great. What's your bounce? What was your bounce rate before?
It was pretty high. You know, I don't remember.
90%? Over 90?
I don't think it was quite that high, but it was pretty high. I don't remember.
Ours was 88.
It sounds like we people would get in and get out. They would download a plan and then they would leave, you know.
We spent so much time trying to figure out what articles we should recommend to people before we started realizing that people just wanted to come in, get the information and leave. And it's not about you not offering the right things to them. It's about you just understanding what the transaction is and right. stop trying to be a dollar store who at the counter has even more impulse items. Your store is already full of impulse items. Yeah. When they've gotten to that point, just kind of let the whatever allow that. And that's what we started getting good with. People just found the silver article. 89% of them went away. We did all this work in figuring out how to place it in certain places and change this and change that. And we got it down to 86%. I was like, more later, we need to just be like,
well, the SEO guy we talked to, he wasn't concerned with it at all. He's like, bounce rate on a website like this doesn't really matter if it's sticky or not. You've got a bigger purpose that you're trying to get people to do, and you're there, and you're giving them.
Because you're only talking about those 10% anyways.
Yeah.
That's your true audience anyways.
And I think what his point was also was that Google knows that. And so they're not as concerned with that. They don't see necessarily a high bounce rate as a crappy website. They might see it actually as quite the opposite, that you've got valuable information that people can get without having to filter through a bunch of crap to get to it. And by the way, can we just stop making crappy mobile sites? Damn. I mean, because you get them and they're just like, and sometimes the video ads pop up and and you can't even scroll through them. And I just bail out. I'm like, this is ridiculous.
And why is AdWords allowing such large, you have probably been as well, especially with the website thing, we were so careful about, even once we had permission to like stuff, like just being mindful, but like, it's over the top how much they allow.
Yeah.
Read the exact same ad above the fold on just like a random kind of like website. And it's like, there was a day where it was like, you only got one and it was only one above the fold. And then the other ones had to load after a certain amount of content. And they would literally get in contact with you and be like, you literally have to, like, we got Google sending us emails being like, you guys have two ads in your header and you can't do that and this, that, and the other. And now it just, I literally go to websites where it's just, the more I scroll, the more ads they have no problem loading in.
It's because I don't think that they're not AdSense, right? So they're just other ads that they're running on there.
No, actually AdSense pretty much has it where they as content loads, they have a different baseline for how, I mean, our website is the same way. I mean, have you noticed everything's become very set and forget? You used to be able to like boost a post on Facebook and set very, now they're like, no, let us, we know how to optimize. I mean, the same for YouTube and the ad where the ads go. And so they're very much about setting and forgetting. And you see people, and I just think that line's a little high right now, or that bar seems a little high right now, because it's really frustrating, and especially on mobile.
Do you upload your videos to Facebook?
I've given it three like really solid tries. In the most recent time, I uploaded 30 over the course of like a month and a half or something like that. Like, I really, really went hard on it, and I exposed Facebook to some really good. So I shared my patio makeover video
right
on Facebook, directly uploaded it to Facebook, and it got a whole bunch of, like, it got millions and millions of views, but it was from other people who just literally took the video and like ran with it. I didn't really care, because it was just like whatever. It was interesting to see what ended up happening with it, and it also made me kind of really weary of Facebook. But then I was of the mind of like, I really don't care about that. Like, truthfully, I don't care. Like, more exposure is more exposure. They just saw me. It doesn't matter if it was my Facebook. Like, I'm past that. But
I used to be the same.
Yeah.
So frustrated that people would steal my stuff and freeboot it and put it on Facebook. And I'd be like, I'm not posting anything on Facebook. And then I kind of came around and thought, it's more exposure, and I'll post the videos. You know, you can probably monetize your Facebook videos, right?
It's just, that was the most recent like thing that the most recent thing that happened that made me put that work into it was like, oh, I can monetize. So I did 30 videos or whatever it was, got good solid views, all things considered. And then I got a check for like $7.46.
So ridiculous. Like,
all right, well.
Each month I get, I don't know, a couple $100 or something. It's nothing, you know? And I think, well, that's not the point of this.
It's not.
The funny thing is I don't it's kind of revealing when you discover that people find you on Facebook, that they don't even know your YouTube channel exists. And so that's, to me, kind of the whole point of this, is to just let people know that I exist and that they can search elsewhere and find me other than Facebook, because Facebook is just so...
I only keep Facebook around because it has been around for so long. I mean, we have 230,000, but like, I'm not trying to be dismissive of the amount of people who follow. Plus, every single video I post it on there, I put a custom thing with there, I boost it, I spend at least $100 on every single video with a boosted Facebook post to like compliment it, and usually much more if it's a sponsored video, just to kind of get some extra attention and whatnot. But I hate the platform personally. I don't use it at all, aside from my mom
Facebook was about a year or two ago, maybe not that long, where Facebook really wanted to be the next YouTube. Remember, they were just like...
And they went hard. And I had a lot of creators being bamboozled. Like, it was during the clamor time. It's like, oh, yeah, you looked into... We're really putting a lot of time into Facebook. And I was like, I don't... I get why you're upset with YouTube, but the people who got upset with YouTube because they felt like they were being stifled or whatever, moved over to a different platform and did some whatever, that's totally fine. I kept focused on YouTube.
Because it's more of a community. Facebook, it's hard because you can't really...
Yeah.
The way videos are viewed is much different. People watch them when they just come through their feed, and there's that whole, you got to get them in the first couple seconds. What? It has to be shorter. It has to... And we tried doing all of that stuff. We would actually re-edit my YouTube videos and put them in a square format with titles. And you got to have subtitles on there because people aren't going to be watching with sound. And I'm like, this is not YouTube at all. This is a totally different, it's just crap. It's just
Have ended up becoming like the tabloid video, because it's a lot of political, that people use it for propaganda, or people use it for endless amount. I mean, it's the same reason why, if you know, when we release The Mop, we're going to go to Facebook and do video specific for Facebook, but not in that way, not like this content, because this content we clearly make for YouTube. And I guess even when we started having people interested in the content and then stripping out the YouTube thing, it is still a unique piece of content. It seems to almost taint it by putting it on Facebook, because I just have respect. I don't turn to Facebook video for that. I turn to that for like probably like graphic stuff that I don't want to see, or news event. I see that like the Now This and the little like, you know, John Elway was charged with a thing, and that like news stuff, it's tabloidy. It's just very tabloidy and TMZ-ish.
And it's because of the nature of the way those posts are promoted and shared, is it the more controversy that's involved, the better. I mean, if you can get like the likes and dislike like ratios up to like half and half, then you're gold. You know, people love that. Anything that's going to emotionally get people angry does really well on Facebook.
I watched the George Floyd, but I have yet to see that being able to like see that on YouTube or any of those like viral kind of, especially that those type like protest videos. I get sometimes that's on like news reports, but like the actual raw videos always seem to be in the cesspool of Facebook. And like, that's like you said, like drama, controversial, not even edgy. It's not. And now it's just so political. Cesspool is, it sounds like a,
ultimately, Facebook is just part of my whole cleansing of my spirit of social media.
Yeah.
Facebook and Twitter both are, I haven't even logged on to Facebook probably in months. I don't even look at it. You know, I rarely, and it's only business stuff. Facebook does really well when we run ads on there. Damn, ads on Facebook are dirt cheap, and you reach a lot of people and they do really well. Twitter, I haven't been on Twitter in probably 3 or 4 years now, maybe, and I don't miss it at all. And I think
it's the most toxic out of all of the platforms.
It is.
Twitter just needs to be shut down.
Somebody made a quote once, and I thought it was fun. I probably told you this. That Twitter is the Hunger Games of moral high ground.
That's very true.
Oh, God. So, yeah, I just think Instagram is fun. I like Instagram because it's just pretty pictures.
Because it was just pretty pictures, and they didn't clutter it up with other stuff. You weren't allowed to, and the hashtags don't take over everything, and it's not, and there's still, and I love the way, the platform I'm most looking forward to learning how to do videos and advertising properly on is Instagram. So actually, that's the only other reason why I have time for Facebook, is just simply because of that.
I'm surprised Facebook hasn't screwed up Instagram really bad and complicated it, but they haven't so far. And but it's funny because Instagram is like kind of destroys some of these up and coming apps, kind of like Snapchat. Once Instagram started doing their stories, it basically, I think that became the, and now they're doing their TikTok version. They're doing Instagram reels.
Yes, which we've played around with, which actually either they're just strongly promoting right now or actually do get really good traction, even versus, you know, posting a video on your actual timeline.
Instagram is one of those things that it bugs me so much that I don't post as much as I would like to on there. Yeah. And I always think, because I spent a couple of weeks since I even posted on there, and I keep telling myself, God, whenever I get into like a groove of daily posting, I kind of go in these phases on Instagram where I'll get really busy posting stuff and then I'll stop for a while. But whenever I'm on those busy periods, wow, the activity, the amount of followers, everything just skyrockets on there. And the one thing about Instagram is that I can pretty much leave it alone whenever I post something. And there's very rarely negativity on there. It's almost always positive comments. It's a real nice community compared to everything else.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a lot of pretty pictures. And I love how you got a little thing and you got 50 characters to be like, hey, here's what I do and here's a couple links. And that's it. And they didn't clutter it with like, well, they now have the tap, like you can tap on a thing to buy if it's an authorized store. Like you can kind of do like, and that's very, very interesting. But again, they've managed to introduce this without this becoming the focus of the platform. The focus of the platform still really seems to be the connection through pictures and Pinteresty that way too.
It is
up where Pinterest kind of fell off the board because it was like being sent through to the pins were created by images on websites that ultimately, like we spent the past 30 minutes talking about, are horrible interactions. And this is just, I mean, I've watched the way people, there's something about just that simple, like
endless scroll.
And it's just picture after picture. And they truncate all of the comments. So if you want to give the comment, like, well, something's caught your attention and you can, you only see like the top sentence of like what it is. And then you have to click more to read a little bit more. And it's like, oh, now I want to see what people, and you kind of dig down into something. But as soon as you come back up, you're still in this big, simple, and it's either sideways for the stories or up like this up motion. And I spent a lot of time looking at people doing it. I'm so fascinated. And that's what makes me fascinated about trying to figure out what that first impression is. It reminds me of my thumbnail interest in YouTube. It's like that first thing that makes someone be like, whatever. And then knowing you have, as Casey Neistat says, knowing you're good enough that you can make something good enough for them to watch once you get their attention, and then learning how to like get their attention just ends up being fast. And so that was a long diatribe about Instagram, but I'm so fascinated with Instagram and just how to like make that initial in that, like, because it's such a seamless way to do messaging, and that's why I see your point about I don't know how Facebook hasn't managed to fuck it up yet.
I actually don't know how, if Instagram like a lost leader or something, because where are they making income off of Instagram?
So,
the ads that people do on Instagram, right? Because we run ads on there sometimes and they do really well.
That's a really good question. Well, you can buy filters, but I'm sure buying filters.
Because you don't really see just random. I mean, you see ads, but they're not too much. And they're actual, the ads have to be related to an actual Instagram page, or not page. I don't, just somebody's Instagram. So like when I run an ad, you can click on it, not the ad, but my name, and it goes to my Instagram. So you know this is an actual person. It's not just a random ad for diapers or something that doesn't make any sense. And it's very targeted.
It is. And I guess that's clearly where they do make all of their money. And the best part is you're using, I will respect Facebook for their technology of understanding user base and how to like, you know, I love that because I follow 20 like artists or art, like I love the art community on Instagram, that all of my ads end up being like, I've been introduced and bought and very happy with products that I've never had that experience before.
I've bought products,
Dave. And I'm so fascinated how they tap into like Kickstarter and like future, like, And it seems to be, it's the community itself or the community who sees the value. So they're the ones making the ads in the form, like it, everything kind of works organically because it just works organically. And everybody's kind of been like, cool, let's not fuck with anything. And this seems to be really, really working because I don't know any other social platform which manages to attract the most amount of like actual screen time from people. Every single time I'm in a store and I see someone enveloped in their phone, unless it's 20% of the time, which is like email on a random website, doing something other random on their phone, 20% maybe like taking a picture or doing something outside of an app on their phone, literally at least 50% of the people that I see on their phone are scrolling through Instagram or have Instagram open or showing something from an Instagram thing or sliding through stories or Instagram stories or something along those lines. It's really, really sad. At least it is here. I'm not too sure what.
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, you see that all the time. I mean, one thing I did is, well, I think I may have mentioned this maybe last week or the week before, was that I have like 3 Instagram accounts now because I set up, I have one for our
cat. Yes, that's right. Yes.
Cat. I'm just fascinated to see if it's possible how you can grow an Instagram account with no outside promotion. I haven't mentioned it and it's really slow. It's really hard. You've got to, I think really, I guess it's like YouTube. You've got to do something that is outstanding. And although I think our cats are really cute and they do cute things, they're not like, basically you have to have a cat with a weird deformity or something for it to be popular, you know?
Or just like whatever, like they're always wearing capes, like just something quirky and memorable. Isn't that the secret to all of this, regardless of the platform? Like we all sometimes get the opportunity to be in front of people and 96 times out of 100 people will forget you because you're just another person. And as much as you had a nice, you know, whatever about you, there's just nothing memorable about you. So I remember my niece, and I'm sure I probably told you the story, she got into Instagram and she's done fairly well on Instagram she's a very beautiful girl and she knows makeup. So she does kind of like a beauty thing, but it's very exactly what you see on Instagram for beauty, like top down shots with that rose gold filter on it of like products in my hand and a Starbucks cup and this little stance where I kind of cock the one leg. She does all the token stuff and she, you know, she gets frustrated. Because, you know, it's just like, it doesn't grow fast enough or there's no sponsors or it's only people wanting to send her free stuff or do giveaways are the kind of engagements that she can get. It's like, because clearly, you know, this part already, every single other girl who's pretty and knows about makeup has a thing. So right now you're competing with 100,000 people. I'm like, you want to be that person who's doing makeup reviews on a roller coaster. Mm. Yeah. And she was like, that's what was, and I was like, but
a good analogy.
Every single person who you told that to would remember the person who tries to do makeup reviews on a roller coaster. So even if they're not even good, people will still remember it. And I'm like, that's what works. There was a guy who is a ninja. I don't remember his name. He's quite big. He's got a very, whatever his deformity, malfunction, disability is, he's very, very small. And he does really, and he does it very, very close up. And he does like response videos. And he's like an internet kind of like celebrity now because his face is just so memorable because he just kind of has that thing. It's like the makeup with Kiss. It's like whatever it may be, just do it something. Put all your cats in capes. And every single picture involves a cat in a cape. And then you can do all of the creative cat pictures, but at least there's that one consistent. And that's why I brought up the thing last time we were talking about, like that girl who's starting to do all of her thumbnails in a green shirt. It's just like, it doesn't even need to be difficult. It just needs to be something different.
You know, it's funny how many people, and the same thing applies to YouTube. YouTube and Instagram are very similar that way. And I collect subscriptions basically at this point, I guess. I don't know why, but I subscribe to channels probably like a lot of people because I see one video, I think it's interesting. Maybe I'll watch another. Maybe I'll go for like a few days where I'm kind of obsessed with somebody and then it fades away. But I'll look through my subscription list, I guess it is. And I probably subscribe to maybe 400 or 500 channels, you know? And it's funny to look through there and see how many of those I've just totally forgotten about because they never post anything anymore. And they were all into it at one time. And this may have been a long time ago, like 8-9 years ago, they were posting videos and it was really cool. And then they just stopped. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they're not getting the traction, the feedback that they were kind of hoping for. And I don't even know what, there is no real secret sauce to that, I guess. And I don't even know if I was to, if I was to start today, I don't think I could grow my channel the way I did. I think a lot of it has to do with how do you start a successful YouTube channel? Well, start it back in 2008 is the first thing to do.
Yes. However, if charged with the same thing, I think I would be able to figure it out using different, like I understood what worked back then and I understand why that wouldn't work right now. So as much as I agree, because I often point that out, it's like the best way to have done it was to do it back in the day that you kept procrastinating, you kept seeing more. I remember when the commentary channels, I sat on wanting for that to be my second channel, like something I... And it was very early on. It was when H3H3 was first kind of starting. And I'm like, this is really interesting. Like, I really like this. It's all about kind of like timing and just kind of taking like punches at people. I'm like, I could totally do this and I could totally settle into this and da da da. But I think now everybody tries to go through and do literally what has happened, you know, what is done in the past, and they don't understand why, if it's working over here, why isn't it working with me?
Yeah.
And then they end up getting caught up in the how do I attract more people as opposed to, yeah.
I think a lot of people also go into YouTube today thinking that it's going to be fun and easy and they're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah. And an audience will just come. Like sooner or later, if you put up enough videos, of course, they'll just come.
I mean, in my realm here, there's easily over 1,000 woodworking channels, you know, at this point. And so they just keep coming out and they're just all doing really the same thing.
Right.
It's the same format. It's the same everything. And there's only maybe 10 that are really good at what they do. And it shows because they're rising up and it's because they're doing something different. But, and it doesn't have to be a really high end production. I know a lot of people also, there's a channel I follow that does like tool reviews and stuff. And I was on their channel briefly. They had to interview with, they're trying to it's one of these things where you try to interview existing YouTubers because yep. that, thinking that's going to draw, but the channel just isn't growing. And they have, I don't know where some of these channels get their money. They've got like investors or something because they've got like full blown professional productions going on, and meanwhile I've like literally scaled back. I'm like one of these few guys left that edits my own videos. I shoot my own videos. Everything is just me except for the course videos. I had an editor for those.
Yeah.
And I tried, experimented with the editor, having her do some of my, you know, YouTube videos, but there was a couple of things. It wasn't timely enough. It would just take too long of a turnaround. And especially now since I'm doing these vlogs, it's just, I've got a system and I know exactly I can crank it out. And plus I kind of like it. It's pretty fun. You know, I enjoy.
I like that I can know every single aspect involved in what produces us money and like what we need to do. Like I understand every single, like I don't need to rely upon any other person. So as much as I don't, and like you were saying, as much as you can't do everything, you at least, even if you have another person doing it, you know, you can do that yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the
I always find that those were the content creators I respected the most. Shane Dawson, Michelle Phan, Michael, but like whoever, they were all doing all of the stuff themselves.
I think, you know, Jack's Films, I think he still does his own editing and everything. It's pretty cool. I like some of these OG YouTubers that are still just cranking it out. And the ones who are still performing and doing well on the platform. He's come out with a lot of new things. Like, well, I think I showed you that one where he did
the
follow your own adventure. Yeah, that's amazing. All right, I guess he's going to do another one of these. So that's going to be a pretty cool thing. He's always inventive like that, always coming up with new ideas. And that's really what it comes down.
That's it, right? That's the space. He's not sitting doing the, you know, he has over the years kind of jump on a few things. But I mean, of course, when fidget spinners come about, like you're going to take your take on it. But he didn't. Yeah, he didn't.
He has good timing. He knows when, how far he can milk something and have it be funny, and then kind of when to let it go. And I thought his thing with one of the most brilliant things he did was that he interviewed people on Santa Monica Pier about name one character from Avatar, the movie. Because it's the highest grossing film of that time. highest grossing film ever made. And he would say, yeah.
When you do not remember, you might remember Unobtainium because of the ridiculousness of it. Right. And I know the guy, Giovanni Ribisi or whatever his name is, I have no idea what their character names are.
And this is the highest grossing movie ever. And this, nobody knows these characters. And it, honestly, I saw the movie once when it came out because that was the rise of the whole 3D, you know, because I wanted to see that. And I just remember being blown away because the 3D was so good. But honestly, I barely remember that movie. It was just like, it was a fleeting thing. I don't know.
I saw a similar video done by, I think I've mentioned them before, Red Letter Media, who do deep dots, like hour-long reviews.
Yeah.
Star Wars videos? Yeah, I've told you, or yeah, you've seen.
Oh, I know Red Letter Media really well. I haven't watched them.
Perfect. That whole angle that they take on the new Star Wars, and they sit down with like Jay and Rich and all of the dudes from there. And it was a very early, like, this was one of the, I think the first Mr. Plinkett review that went really, really big. And the point that they make in there, yeah, because it was for The Phantom Menace. And they're like, describe Prince, or describe, Harrison Ford's character. Oh my gosh, Harrison
Han Solo.
Han Solo. Describe Han Solo.
Oh, I've seen this.
Dropping, and it's like, describe Cao Jin, or describe like Jar Jar Binks. He's annoying. Sometimes falls into things, and it was so wonderful to show the difference between character development and then just like toys, for all intents and purposes. But that's what that made me think of. But that's it. That's the stuff that literally also makes us talk about a few creators just in this exchange. One of the things that has always made me grateful about what we managed to kind of, we stumbled into it, but we acknowledged it very quickly and expanded and grew this into what it is by acknowledging the potential of it very quickly. But I think it's tough to have people come and be like, how do you make a successful kind of YouTube channel without telling people that like 99% will just fail because you won't work hard. Like, because you're asking in the first place is already your first obstacle. I don't know what to tell you that it should just be. I felt compelled to do it just because I wanted to do it. And then when I got the smallest amount, when we got 100 subscribers, and again, that's also a mindset thing. I get how people look at what YouTube is now, and it needs to be there's startup programs and optimize and data. And that used to just be like, hey, here's this little website and I can put some videos up. And the first video is a guy at the zoo.
Right.
Like, and now, and I saw some other people, and then the vlogging thing happened and data, and like, it kind of went from there. But it was like, it was organic and it was driven by that, as opposed to like you thinking that you need to build something. So like you're trying to go out and find an audience as opposed to trying to put stuff out there and have an audience find what you're putting out there.
Yeah.
And that's hard to tell, like, cause that's just I don't know, a switch, just a thing.
I think it just, there's so many, God, I've given all of this so much consideration over the years, and I've gone through just different phases of my own channel and how I approach it and everything. And it really comes down, I think, to just your channel first has to have a focus. There's too many channels that don't really, when somebody sees your channel, they need to know exactly what you're about. I mean, Clean My Space says it right in the title, and it's pretty obvious what this is going to be about. You can look at any of the thumbnails and you know exactly what you're getting into. And I think the second thing is you really have to understand that to be successful on YouTube, you got to work really hard. You got to put in a lot of effort. It's not just setting up a camera and shooting. You got to be willing to just do it consistently on a regular basis. You got to be able to engage your audience. You got to have a personality. And if you don't have one, you got to have somebody in front of the camera who does have a personality, because that's what people want to, why they want to keep watching again and again, is to kind of feel a part of that fam. I can't believe I just said fam.
Hashtag fam. But it's the absolute truth. People either try to start too broad or just try to start with like, all right, but I have a vlogging, or don't understand that what they think is a niche isn't a niche. Yeah, but it's just me. It's my take on interesting news topics in kind of like a talk show fashion. It's like, yeah, but that's that's not niche enough. I get that you've maybe narrowed it down from a billion types of videos down to like a million types of videos. But as you said, literally in our names, and that was the main reason why we went with Clean My Space. And we literally went through 4 years of hell because MySpace was still there. So we got buried in the search engines because Clean My Space pages and Clean My Space templates, when people used to remember the days of like getting templates for your MySpace.
Right.
Very difficult to get Clean MySpace. Anyways, we won. MySpace lost.
Clearly.
We niched it. You woodworking for mere mortals in the name. Like, you had the opportunity to not only be the first, you could just been like, hey, I'm one of the only dudes doing woodworking, but you also narrowed it down even further to like directed towards, and that's what was so, and as soon as you started getting into your content, it was this guy who was setting up a camera in his shop and teaching people how to whatever with a quirky sense of humor and like, just like, and that's what was so appealing about the platform. Now the platform itself has become glamorized, so now you need to be glamorized.
And I think it's
that whole essence is out of it, and every single day you need to set up that camera sitting behind you and film a video, and sooner or later that's going to be work. Or sooner or later, that's just going to be like something you look forward to. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to try this. And I'm going to try something a little different this time. And but either way, when you set up the camera and you actually are doing that work, all of that work, as you said, like, of course, it always feels like work, but it's coming from a place where it's like, no, like, this doesn't feel like that kind of work.
Yeah.
And those channels that spurred out, who give it a good try, who buy all the right products and say all the right things and do all the right calls to action and make their videos do well.
I think a lot of people don't pay close attention to what people respond to also. I think you see channels that never respond to comments. And while you don't have to respond to comments to understand, you should at least read those, and you should at least understand by looking at analytics and looking at what people seem to be watching and be willing to head into that direction. And I always hear, you know, people say, if you want to be good at, just do what you love. And it's like, well, that's part of it. But if you're running a business, you also have to do what your customers want. And so you have to find this balance, hopefully enough that it's still fun and enjoyable to make. I mean, sure, I would like to have some higher end equipment in my shop and a CNC machine and all this, but it would just totally go against the brand that I've established and what people are here to see, and just the amount of backlash and everything. So I have to say, well, I can still have fun doing this particular kind of woodworking that I do, which is very simple and basic, and then just lean into that and go with those. That's what people are responding to. Any video I looked through in my entire library that has just been a dud, and I can almost always kind of figure out why it was a dud, you know, I think it's not that difficult. Once in a while, there's some surprises, but
it's most often because you're trying hard or you're reaching and trying to make something. The example of the cleaning expert answers the web. Yeah, exactly. We wanted that to work so well. And I was like, wow, this will be our first training. And I think that set us up, because we were thinking that before we even shot the video. So the video was almost shot with that in mind. And right. Yeah.
It's like trying to make a viral video. I remember when we were at Clamor last year, and I had this idea. I thought it was going to be cool to do. I wanted to do one of these React videos. React, and I thought it would be fun to react to like these HGTV and DIY Network, these TV shows that show people doing these pseudo woodworking, and just react to how like really crappy work doing stuff. But the more I thought about it, I thought it just comes off as mean spirited, and it's off brand for what I do. And it would not, my initial thought was, this is cool because it's something new and everybody's going to like this and people love React videos, but not necessarily a React video is going to work for every channel. So I'm really glad I didn't do that, because I think I would have probably got some backlash on it. I mean, I'm really careful about even particular words or sentences I say sometimes. And if I have to, when I'm editing a video, and I may have said something that's just a little bit kind of snotty or snarky, if I stop to think about it, that's usually enough to tell me, okay, I better take it out. If I'm second guessing myself, so you can, if you do an entire video based on something you're second guessing, probably not a good idea. But no, I think the Google thing would, to me, that sounds like a really cool thing to do. That would have worked, but who knows?
But and that's it. Like you were saying, it ends up being a balance between you respecting what the audience not only expects of you, but also kind of the direction that they kind of want you to go. And then you being confident enough to allow yourself to kind of be open to the possibility of other things, and then figuring out how you can put your creative spin on it or what. So it ends up always being this. Like, if you think it's chess, like, I get it. I think one should start out that way, because I think it keeps people laser focused on being niche and remembering to not want to do the videos which you're doing and not get distracted and stay like this for a while. But then as things start to grow, you clearly start getting hundreds of thousands of people paying attention, and they like it for a certain reason. Then now you also indeed have created something where you need to appreciate the other half of this.
Yeah.
So I think it's at different times you need to kind of,
yeah, and you've got to grow.
There's at different times that you need to lean back into like staying in your lane. Like you said earlier, it's like there's times where like you can get really good growth and you can think that like even more growth would be like whatever. And it's that times, like there's just different times and different circumstances which allow you to like lean back into that like niche.
I think a lot of it is just, it's just experience. It's just doing the reps and having years of doing it. You kind of get a sense for what will probably work and what won't. There's always going to be surprises. And I think it's important that you have to be willing to change to a certain extent. People want to see change, but they also don't want you to change. So it's kind of a, you know, like, I miss the old videos at the same. So, and that's only if you do something totally drastic. If you incrementally change what you're doing, it's usually for the best, I think. And you have to do that. Otherwise, you just get stagnant. And those are the channels, I think, that just die is when you
I think you need to respect it. I think you need to understand it. And in case what makes people want you to say the same, and take it as a compliment and be like, I love how... we can always find a way to bring it back to wrestling. I don't want to be that dude complaining about wanting the, that's what really got me super, like that helped me bridge from being a teenager, early 20s to like moving away from that kind of stuff to like all this edginess brought me back into it at a perfect time. But my goodness, thinking we would ever want to go back to that has always reminded me to be mindful of what people used to look at in our content and with Melissa and what they wanted. And now that we've moved and grown and tried different things and kind of have expanded in certain ways, when we do come across those people, they're like, I wish it was, you know, when you just used to make how-to videos.
Yeah.
We're actually doing that now out of respect for that, and out of respect for the fact that like videos which are from 8 to 10 years ago literally aren't getting any traction, and their core videos like that, how to clean your toilet, and even though some of them have huge views, they're just getting no traction right now. So we're going through and kind of rebooting those and putting
those. I was fully expecting to talk to you more about the thumbnail situation, but here we are again
and products.
I was going to talk to you some more about Alibaba and stuff, so we gotta let's meet on Friday. We cool on Friday?
Yeah. Can we do a
It's just, I work with my trainer at 11 o'clock Pacific time. I get home, I eat some protein meal, and then
yeah.
So I could do it earlier on Friday. So it'd be like, I could do 8, that'd be 11 o'clock your time.
Do you have later in that day available?
Or I could do 4 o'clock your time. That'd be 1 my time.
If we can set that one up. That one is perfect.
Okay, 1 o'clock.
All right.
Let's do that. We can talk about some. This was kind of fun, though, to get in on talk about all this stuff today.
This one was a really meaty podcast right there. Us, like the amount of like deep dive stuff that someone who was listening into that particular conversation would have had. Anyways,
I recorded this one too. It'll be.
Oh, did you? Oh, excellent.
I've been recording, and so the last two, I haven't listened to the other one. Recorded
faster. I've never had that conversation with anyone on that level before.
That was
thank
awesome.
You. Like, it's so like, I, even within people within who like are in this exact same space as us, both creators, both da da da, not on that level of truly understanding and the whole.
We've got to figure out as a podcast, getting this on a podcast. And it's almost like, I was saying, it doesn't have to be highly produced, you know?
No, it doesn't. It really,
it'd be interesting just to dump this out there. I just got to figure out the logistics of that. I think that's what kind of eats at me about podcasting. It's hard for me to wrap my brain about how to post them. I know you've got to like have an RSS feed or something, and then you distribute. I just don't, it's not like YouTube, we just upload it, you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I've got to get past that. I've got to spend some time.
Would this be the way that it was done, and then we would just take this and give this to someone and be like, can you make something out of this? Or do we go through it?
I would think that I could just edit this as an audio recording. We haven't really done much visual here, and just, I don't even think it needs much editing. I'd be like, whatever. If people want to listen to this.
We
could easily establish, you know, a pre-recorded intro or something, but we don't, you know, let's have it like a low rent podcast. I don't know.
And just to do it. And actually, I mean, that was the thing that was stopping us, right? It was just like the overthinking and whatever. And this has provided us an opportunity where we've proven that.
I'm going to listen to.
Still in the context of you and I just having a Zoom call. And that's why I'm just That's why I'm just wondering about.
Yeah.
We just find a way to figure out how to just kind of take that. And our conversation starts to become more understanding, and we stop maybe with over talking and like whatever, or maybe we like just try to figure out a way to like understand that we're also trying to make our conversation be something which can ideally just be like, we can just like take it, no editing, and this is directly.
I'm gonna try to listen to this and see if it's even listenable. We'll see what it, and you know, another thing, I noticed that on like Spotify now, I was listening to H3 podcast. They have the video is on Spotify with it now. Is that anything, or
is it just a looping kind of thing that goes?
Actual video of them, just like this Zoom call.
Oh, so their podcasts actually have video components to them.
Yeah. I don't know if that must be something new, but I haven't listened to H3 in a while, and I just watched that the other day.
When you record this, this also gets recorded, the screen. Do both screens get recorded, or is it a split screen thingy?
It's a split screen.
And not even that matters. I mean, like.
I'm not sure. I haven't looked at it yet. I'll have to look at it.
I'm just wondering how to get from like not having something to having something. And I think a lot of the other stuff will just once like, okay, here it is. And we did a thing. Let's try that again. And let's try that again. And getting better and better and better at it.
Well, I'll see if I have some time. I'll look into that. Right. And see if we can figure out. I mean, it can't be rocket science. There's all kinds.
No, it's not. It's an audio file.
Nitwit with podcasts that are way more nitwittier than us.
We know how to make websites and YouTube channels and videos. I'm pretty sure we can handle figuring out how to make an audio file available on podcasts. And maybe if there needs to be some kind of still or something associated, I'm sure we'd be able to figure that out too.
All right. Let's figure it out. My goal.
All right. And we'll
ton of fun today, Chad. Thanks.
Yeah. Always, man. Have a good rest of your day, and I will speak to you on Friday.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care, man. Bye, Steve.